God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone can use the chat function to announce themselves or throw up a blue hand in the participants pad or wave at their screen, whichever you see fit.
You can also unmute.
All righty. No one in their first 30 days. Got it. Well, if you're shy, welcome. We're glad that you're here. Our preamble, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we'll be discussing Step 12, Part 1. Please welcome our panel, Dave H. and Larry W. All right. And let me see if I can get this up for everybody. I'll read the first paragraph on page 89, and then we'll do our back and forth sharing. Let me get this shared up there for you guys to see. All right. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Page 89, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is a bright spot of our lives. Who wants to go first, Larry or Dave? Go for it, Larry.
Hey, Larry. Thanks, Grant. Thanks for asking me to come speak. Step 12 is Larry alcoholic, by the way. Step 12 is very important to me. It is the keystone of my sobriety today. Just the normal stuff to get out of the way. Larry alcoholic. My sobriety date is 1/31/2017. I have a sponsor. I have a home group. My home group is the Candlelight Meeting Friday nights at 8 p.m. I have a service position within that home group. And I'm also lucky enough and fortunate enough to sponsor other people in this program. So got that stuff out of the way. Step 12, it was one of those steps when I came in. I had a really bad sponsor. Every time I said something like, I want to drink, my sponsor was like, yeah, you should. You really should. When I say things like, you know, the world doesn't appreciate me enough. And he's like, yeah, you're right. You know, when my wife was the problem, my sponsor was like, yeah, your wife is the problem. When I thought these AA meetings were really stupid, my sponsor was like, yeah, they really are stupid. You should stop going. You should go to that meeting drunk. And all these things happened because I sponsored myself. And I was using the same thought process that put me in the first place to sort of navigate my experience through AA. I don't need your help. I'd much sooner ask you for directions when I'm lost than to ask for directions in life. So I'm certainly not going to ask you to help me. So I sat in the rooms of AA, looking at those steps on the wall, thinking someone like me could never do this. But I sure don't need your help. So I did not want a sponsor. I didn't want any assistance with this because I'll figure it out on my own. I'm a smart guy. I manage processes for a living, and I look upon that's 12 steps. That's a process. I can cut down. I'm a Lean Six Sigma black belt. I can cut it down to like 4 or 5 steps. Skip all the God stuff. That's not important. And certainly like working with other people. Yeah, I don't like people. I don't want no parts of that. So I didn't do it. In the first year and a half of AA, I drank. I took my first drink when I was 11 years old. And I really thought that I was really young until I started coming to AA and found, wow, that's not so much. But for the first year and a half of coming to meetings, I drank. I remember one time I went out to eat with a friend, and this is after I'd been sober for just a little bit. And they were like, Larry, did you used to come to meetings drunk? And I was like, yeah. Like, yeah, you weren't really fooling us. I thought I was fooling everybody. I thought no one knew. But I'd often go to meetings intoxicated, and I'd leave early, show up late, stare at my watch most of the time, waiting for the time to be over so I could get out of there. Because I really, at the time, I wasn't really there for me. I was kind of there to appease my wife. And I didn't want to stop drinking, so I did not stop drinking. And then I did something even crazier for me is that eventually I got to a point where I wanted to stop. I just didn't know how. I thought I could do it on my own. So what I did is I got to a point where I was willing to pick up a white chip, and I did that. And then I proceeded to do exactly what I was doing before, which was go to meetings. Didn't change anything else other than I took away alcohol, and life got even crazier, got even worse, actually. So now I'm going to AA meetings. I'm not taking the steps, right? I'm thinking that I'm doing AA, right? In my mind, I'm doing this AA thing. I'm telling my friends, I'm telling my brother who's in prison, like I'm doing AA. When I finally got to the point where I was willing to do something different and ask someone to help, my sponsor explained to me that I hadn't been doing AA. I've been going to meetings, and AA is the steps. In this step in particular, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, that's been my experience. It was the culmination of the steps of having that spiritual awakening. And this notion that it works when all other things fail, I tried them all, man. I did a 10-day silent meditation retreat. You meditate for 10 hours a day, because I'd read an article that gets you sober. I mean, it did for like 3 months. I got really good at Ashtanga yoga. That got me sober for a few months. All types of books, man, you name it, Pema Chodron, self-help books, all types of stuff. It did not help me. And oddly enough, I take these steps with a sponsor, and I take them rapidly because he said this is an altruistic program. Our goal is to get to the business of helping others and passing this on. And that's what I did. And that's what worked for me. It worked when all other things failed, carrying this message. And it's just the same way it worked, you know. In our book, it tells a story about Bill W., 6 months sober, having a rough time, and he wants to drink. And he has a choice to make. He can either go to the bar where they're laughing and having fun, or he can go help a drunk. And luckily, he decided to go help a drunk. And I can tell you, so many times I called my sponsor and vomited in his ear. And his response is, did you get any newcomers' numbers? What meetings you been to? How's those amends coming along? He always directed me back to these steps. For me, just my experience, my life. There's a handful of people in here who may have known me. I went to meetings at Chesapeake in the very beginning, but I was a very angry person sitting in these rooms. And I am lucky enough today to see what this paragraph talks about. People, the light coming back in their eyes, becoming a part of a fellowship. That's something that I had to learn how to do. I wanted no parts of anything like that. but I'm so glad that I stuck around. Anyways, that's all I got.
Thanks, Larry. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. Y'all hear me? All right, good. Thanks for asking me, Grant, this afternoon at about 4:30 to be here tonight. I needed this, and you know, God is always on time. So it's good to see a lot of familiar faces out there. I haven't seen in a while. I miss you guys. And you know, I went to my first meeting at, well, I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the New Day group. My sobriety date's July 14th, 2002. And I went to my first AA meeting at the age of 19 as a result of my first DUI. It scared me to death. I didn't want any part of it. I didn't think I had any problem drinking. Everybody else was the problem. And I never went back. I had four DUIs. I never went to another AA meeting because I knew you guys were talking about not drinking and I didn't have any interest in that. And so I spent the next 23 years avoiding AA basically. And then I got into a corner and I couldn't get out. You know, it was either go to treatment or sleep in the woods for the rest of my life. I spent my first night sober in the woods. Luckily, the guy that fired me offered to send me to treatment, and I had no other answer but yes. And I say all this because, you know, when I went there, I had really had no idea what AA was about other than not drinking. And, you know, but 10 days of not, well, first off, you know, they decided that they liked me so much, they wanted me to stay for 3 months. And I thought that was a little excessive. But so I said, don't y'all have like a 28-day program? I was willing to compromise, you know. So I started in that. But after about 10 days, I realized just, you know, how miserable I was, how lonely I was. I'd never stopped long enough to even look at that. You know, I always drank to get over those feelings. Shame, remorse, all of that. And so after 10 days, I'm feeling it. And one night we were in the Serenity Garden talking, swapping war stories, and this nurse came out and told us to go to bed. And I got really angry. Who is she to tell me what to do? And I'm a grown man. And I'm in the asylum, but I'm a grown man. And but, you know, and the next day I said the serenity prayer. It was my only tool. I went to bed. I got up. I was still angry. I said the serenity prayer. And that morning, a fellow who had been there about 2.5 months, he is an old timer, you know, to me. He came out and it convinced me. It took a while that under that anger was fear. And I was afraid of giving up control. And, you know, once I got that, I said, you know, I haven't done a very good job being in control. You know, I'm in the asylum. And at that point, I think I took step two and I decided I needed to do what the people in AA were saying, what the counselor was saying, and give it a shot because I did not want to go back to living the way I had. And that guy helped me tremendously. And he only had a couple months, you know. And what I found, I got a sponsor right away after that. I stole him like I did everything else, but that's another story. And that guy helped me tremendously. He had me call him every night. He didn't grill me. We talked about what the meeting we'd gone to was about, what the topic was, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, lo and behold, 3 weeks later, boy meets girl on AA campus, and I needed to talk to him. And he told me to nip in the bud, nip in the bud. And but he was right. And he, you know, he helped me tremendously there too. And so anyway, and then when I got to, you know, 2 or 2.5 months, I was able to help the new guys that were coming in there into the treatment center. So I got all of that while I was there. And I knew that I liked it and I wanted to do that. I wanted to help people. You know, of course, I was thinking at that point, I'm going to become a counselor and all that, which I didn't do. But, I liked the helping people part. And I got out and came back and lived in an Oxford house and got a sponsor and went through the steps. And you know, I'd heard the, you know, you're going to help me more than I'm going to help you and all that. But I didn't know if I believed that. I didn't know if I could do this stuff either, but I did it because he helped me and he showed me how to do it. And so, you know, in the end, I got to start helping other people. you know, first doing a little service around the home group, and later, you know, I actually started sponsoring people. And it's true, it helps me more than it helps them. I'm pretty sure about that, because I need all the help I can get. So I think that's enough on that one. Thanks.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Larry. That was a great start, guys. Thank you so much again for stepping up at the last minute too. All right, let's see. We're on page 91 for our next reading. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his.
Back to you. Thanks, Grant. Larry, still an alcoholic. General conversation. That's exactly what my sponsor did for me. I had been going to meetings for, 2.5 years before I asked somebody to sponsor me. I was very familiar with my sponsor. I did not like him. Laughed a lot. Nothing was funny to me. I didn't understand what was so funny and why they laughed so much. Kind of always shared the same thing, same message. Get a sponsor, take the steps, blah, 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 blah. Same thing over and over and over again. And I was just, there was a message that sort of snuck its way through there. And it was this, he'd always talk about this concept of untreated alcoholism. And man, that, it just, I get emotional thinking about it, because that single message resonated with me. You put enough alcohol in me, I'm going to do dumb stuff. You know, I destroyed a hotel room once. It was this RE/MAX convention. And, you know, you sign up, they have an open bar, they give you a hotel room. I had to call my wife to pick me up from the oceanfront, because I destroyed this hotel room. And I don't even work for RE/MAX. That's the weird thing about it. I just found my way into a RE/MAX convention and socially engineered to let them think I worked for them. Put enough alcohol in me, I'm going to do dumb stuff. I have a laundry list of that. And my sponsor and I, you know, we would go back and forth, but I'm thinking to myself, this guy's younger than me. You know, it's a Navy guy. I'm not going to learn anything from this guy. You know, I drank way longer than him. But man, when he talked about untreated alcoholism, it's every bit of it is what I felt, because I hadn't had alcohol in my body for a while. And I was more miserable than I had ever been. I wasn't doing all the stuff. My wife left. She came back. All that stuff was back together. But I was miserable on the inside. I was an empty shell of a human being. And I was this close to homicide, suicide, something. Something was going to happen. And I remember sitting outside of a public house on Collie Avenue, which oddly enough is right across the street from my current home group. And I was, I'm sadistic. I was watching people go in and out of that bar drinking with impunity. And I was fighting that devil and that angel on each side saying, go drink. No, don't go drink. Go drink. Don't go drink. It's almost been a year. It's been that you can do it. No, you can't do it. Just go drink. No one will know. And I had never shared in a single AA meeting the entire 2.5 years I've been going to meetings, never opened my mouth once. And I'm in a meeting in Chesapeake, and I opened my mouth and I told that story that I was this close to a drink. And my wife, who had gotten sober years before me, after the meeting, pulls me aside and says, you know, if you had a sponsor, you know, this might help you navigate. Maybe you can pick up the phone and call somebody. And I was like, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard of. I don't need a sponsor. I haven't drank in a long time. I'm doing this, man. I'm doing this AA thing. I haven't drank in a while. What do I need a sponsor for? And the next very following week, I go to my therapist and I explain to him all this. And she's like, yo, you know, you should get a sponsor. Take the steps. My therapist is a 12-step based therapy. And I was like, that's a great idea. You know, that actually, I'm glad you said that. I'm going to do that. So I go to the candlelight meeting, and that guy that sat in that corner that I could not stand, who who always was laughing, came up. I stood up in the meeting and I shared. And I guess it was just all over me. It was oozing the amount of struggling and pain that I was in. He walked up to me and said, hello. And I said, would you be my sponsor? He probably barely got a word out. And it was just like that. And all he did was tell me about his drinking experience. A lot of the things didn't match. Like, you know, I drank a long time. I drank for decades. But so many of those mental inconsistencies, that whole cycle that going through of making these promises of not drinking, like swearing on my dad's grave, swearing to everything, this will not happen again. And I accidentally get drunk and it happens again. And I have no idea why. And then I arise from that with guilt, shame, and remorse. And then I'm like, yo, I'm not doing this again. I'm done. I am done. And then boom, maybe a week, maybe a month, who knows? I'm doing it again. And all of that made total sense to me. And all he did is exactly what this paragraph says. Just told me what happened to him, how he drank, his experience, talked about himself. I talked about my experience. No moralization, no lecturing. Didn't tell me what I had to do. You know, my sponsor's the kind of person, if I wanted to go drink, he'd give me a ride. Because he's not there to tell me not to drink. He's there to tell me how to take these steps. And it didn't make any sense to me at first. But, you know, one thing I did not hear is take the cotton out of your ear and put it in your mouth. I didn't hear sit down and shut up. He was not there to run my life. He was there to take me through these steps. He gave me just enough room. Now, he was firm and he was honest. And he told me the truth about myself that he saw from his perspective. But he was not moralizing or lecturing me. I came in, and I'll talk about it in a little bit, but I came in as a strong atheist. And he wasn't telling me what I had to believe or not believe, what I had to do, what I didn't have to do. He said, call me every day. He asked me a few questions from the very beginning. You willing to go to any length to maintain victory over alcoholism? Will you call me every day? Will you go to meetings? And when we take these steps, that you do the same for somebody else. Because if we go through this whole process and you do not pass it on, I will have wasted my time. And that's as firm as he was. And then we did that and we took these steps. So that's the way I do it with guys who I'm lucky enough asked me to sponsor them today. I just share my experience. It may not work for you, but this is just what worked for me. It's practical experience. You can try it. You don't have to. Anyways, that's all I got.
Thanks, Larry. Dave, alcoholic, and sounds like we had a similar sponsor. My second guy, when I came back to Virginia Beach, and my Williamsburg sponsor told me not to call him anymore until I got a sponsor in Virginia Beach because I was about to drink and I needed somebody face to face. And he was right. I asked the guy that I couldn't stand. He was at most of the meetings I went to. He shook the book at you while he was sharing. And at one meeting, he had said, if you want to drink, I'll give you $20. And, you know, $20 wasn't enough for me. If he'd have said $100, I'd have probably taken it and gone and got drunk. But you know, circumstances were when I would do, you know, when I needed somebody, he was the guy. Because he knew, he did know the book. And he took me through steps 4 through 9 in the book. And he listened. He turned out to be a better listener than I expected. But he was also firm, like Larry said, and kept me on the path. But he didn't moralize or lecture. I had some guys in my home group too at that time that I really looked up to and admired and really helped me out. And you know, the way they did it with me and the way I tend to do it when I meet somebody new, you know, it's kind of like what it was like, what happened, what it's like now in reverse, you know. I really talk more about, you know, how I got there. What you know, what was that final straw? And I moved back through some stories about what my drinking was like. And then usually we find some common ground there. And like it says in the paragraph here, we'll start talking and he'll share some stories and there'll be a connection. And I like the last thing about, you know, if his mood is like, tell him humorous stories. Because I remember when I went to my first meeting in that treatment center and everybody's laughing and having fun before the meeting, I'm going, what is happening? Don't they know my life is over? You know, I can't drink anymore. This is serious, you know. But on the other hand, I was attracted to it because once they started to share and I heard their stories, I knew they were like me, but they were obviously enjoying life, which I hadn't done in a long time. And, you know, they had licenses and maybe wives or girlfriends, and that was attractive to me too. But, you know, it'd been a long time for both of those things. So, you know, like I said before, I had no idea what AA was like when I got here, but the people showed me just by their actions, by the way they behaved, by the way they talked to me and listened to me. And that's what I want to do when I meet somebody new. I want to make it attractive to them. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. That was stellar. You guys are just rolling it, man. I love it. Let's see. We got page 91 for a little more of our reading. Let's see if I can get this a pull up right. All right. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding the first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
Thanks, Ryan. I remember having an epiphany when I first read through this chapter with my sponsor. You know, I'd been going to meetings for quite some time. I had never once opened a big book, not once. Didn't own a big book. My wife owned a big book. Matter of fact, I tell the story. I have the book in this room right behind me where, you know, before I got sober and she had got sober, I was really upset she had joined this cult. And this cult had a, you know, these blue books. Well, she had a special one. It was red. I don't know what was so special about it, but it was different. And I got really upset at her one night and I snatched that book out of her hand because my drinking buddy was gone. She was spending time with these culty people. And I chucked that big book out the door. It was pouring down rain. And now that same book is all warped and whatnot. We still have it. I know now it was a first edition big book, you know, so, hey, my bad. But I never read it. I see it in my house all the time, but I never opened it up. And I remember reading this chapter with my sponsor and I was like, oh my gosh. All that stuff you were doing, it's right out of this book. You were just following this book. Like I'm sitting there thinking that my sponsor had all these great concepts, right? He was this great, counselor to get me through this. And all he was doing was exactly what it says in this book. He was telling me about his drinking game, you know, telling me how hopeless it was. And everything he was saying, I was like, I did the same thing. I felt the same way. You know, maybe the actual actions were different, but like the underlying feeling and emotion, totally the same. I remember my sponsor broke it down and my sponsor was a gamer too. So he was like, you get the Xbox, but you want the PlayStation 4. And I'm like, yes, I'm never satisfied. Like every little bit, I'm like, how does he know this? And then I remember reading this chapter like, oh my God, this dude is just step 12-ing me. He's doing exactly what it says right here. And that's all he did, showed me from his own experience over and over and over again, his own experience. I remember him telling me, like, keep it internal. Talk about yourself, you know? And my sponsor was never one to say you. He never uses that word very often. You need to. It's really, here's what I did. Or what he'll do very often is if he doesn't have experience, he'll refer me to someone who does within our little circle of people. But it's all about practical experience over and over and over again. Here's my experience with that. And I love the phrase, you know, if I remember it's such a cliche phrase, but I say it to him today all the time, is let me know how that works for you. Never try to talk me out of anything. So let me know how it works for you. Yeah, man, I'm thinking of leaving my wife. Yeah, let me know how that works. You know, how about you just try being a husband for a little while? He didn't do that for a long time. And all he was doing was being honest. And he would share his own experience in the same situation. I'll say this and I'll pass it. You know, my wife is not my sponsor, but she knew enough about this program where she allowed me to discover my own path. And in some cases, she would suggest that I drink, which blew my mind. I was like, you're in that culty thing. Are you supposed to be telling me to drink? But she had read this chapter. And what she never did is she never labeled me an alcoholic. In 2014, she told me I had a problem. You got a problem. And I said, yes, I do. It's you. You're my problem. And if you would just get yourself together, I wouldn't be drinking so much. And she left. She left me. And luckily, I swindled my way back into her heart and she came back. But I did not stop drinking. What I started to do at that time, I started to hide it from her. Now I'm hiding my drinking because I can't drink around the alcoholic. That would be silly. So I started to like drink and literally became a closet drinker. But she never branded me an alcoholic. Now we talk about it. Of course she knew. She saw it all. And I can't tell anybody if they're an alcoholic or not. I don't know. That's something for you to determine. I used to think there were these criteria of how much you drank, how long you drank. You know, today it's to put it very bluntly, the way it's explained to me and the one that makes most sense to me is that when I start drinking, I cannot stop. And the one that really makes sense to me is that when I stop, I can't stay stopped. That is the one. I mean, that one right there, because I stopped so many times. So many times I stopped. This is it. This is the last time. And I couldn't stay stopped. And it wasn't until, even to this day, I can be all in my head, guaranteed, because I still do it, and my phone will ring, and it'll be somebody from this great fellowship, and it just, I don't know, it just pulls me right out of it. It works when all other measures fail. Anyways, thanks. That's all I got.
Thanks, Larry. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic, and I want to go to another treatment story. I know this is the 12th step, but to me, that, you know, when I was new, I was guided, like it talks about here, into a lot of different, you know, spiritual awakenings, whatever, you know, new ideas and new concepts that I had not had before, or did not come from me. But the first night I was in there, I went to a book study and they had read all the way through the book and they're at the doctor's opinion, you know, and we read the doctor's opinion. And at the end of it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. Who knew? Everybody knew but me, you know, but I knew at that point because I, you know, in that doctor's opinion, it tells me what's wrong with me, that I'm sick. And that was such a relief to me because I just thought I was bad. You know, I'd done a lot of bad things, and but to know that I was sick and that there was a solution and that there were people in there that had done it, man, I went to a meeting after that. They took us to a meeting. I picked up a white chip, knock on wood, the last one and only one. And, but I really, you know, to know that it's the first drink that gets me drunk. I mean, what a concept, you know. But it's the truth. Once I started, I never stopped until I, you know, either passed out or ran out or whatever, couldn't steal anymore. And, you know, and that strange mental twist, at one point it called me, it says we're strangely insane. I mean, isn't insane bad enough? Well, I got to be strangely insane, you know. But anyway, that gets me every time. So it wasn't in this reading, but it made me think of it. But the hopelessness too, I related so much to that. I couldn't put that stuff into words. I felt it, but I didn't know what the feelings were. I had to use that thing on the wall with the 100 faces, with the different pictures, with the, you know, hopeless and sad and happy and, you know, jealous, whatever. I had to use that to put words on my feelings because I was really so emotionally bound up. I just did not think anything about all that. I just like to stay drunk and not have to think about it. And it talks about the normal functioning of the willpower in here. And I'm not sure what that is, but other than to align it with God's will that I know now, but I, you know, more than any other concept, I may have had the most trouble with will, you know, and how to use my will, and what does it mean to turn my will over, you know, and God gave me this will, free will. What, if I give it back to him and say, you shouldn't have done that, is that what I'm supposed to do? So, you know, but later in the book, of course, and after time, I learned that just do the right thing. Be honest, you know. Be honest and be honest quick. That was in a reading David told me, that sent me the other day. I love that. And then the little chance that he can recover by himself. I mean, that's what a bottom did for me. You know, I knew I couldn't do it by myself. I never really tried to quit. I tried to slow down when I moved one time, and that lasted about 20 hours. You know, but I had a new bar and a new bunch of buddies, drinking buddies, within a couple of days. But, you know, I need help. I need you guys. And the new people coming in need us, you know, and it's beautiful how that works, you know, that we have a pretty good supply coming in, and you know, it's going to keep us sober if we do what we're supposed to. And I, you know, supposed to, what does that mean? I shouldn't have said that, but that's like should. I shouldn't say should, but here I go. Anyway, thanks.
Thanks. That was great. I love the reminder that I don't know what I don't know. And you guys showed me how to find out all about that. All right, I got this next one teed up. Let's see, page 94. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are.
Thanks, Greg. This part right here, man, it hits me because I did come in, as I said earlier, I came into AA a very strong anti-theist, not just an atheist. Like I thought the belief in a God was a form of weakness. I didn't believe or I didn't know. I thought those that did, I immediately judged you because of that. So I did not think I could get this program. I did not think it was for somebody like me. But I had tried so many other things and just not, I was just so beaten up. I didn't know what else to do. I it's the truth. Early on, I was just willing to do anything. Man. I was praying to a God in my sponsor's room. That I did not believe in. I did not believe, but I was willing to give it a shot. And my sponsor, you know, I do have a higher power today, and I use the word God. And I know God puts people in certain people's paths for a reason, but I happened to pick the guy that was just as well-versed in religion as I was. who, you know, I used to learn, I fancied myself a scholar of religion. And the reason I did that is so I could debate you on your religion and show you where you were wrong. So I read those books looking for the inconsistencies and the contradictions. And I got a guy to sponsor me who had done the same thing, who was familiar with all the books that I read, was familiar with all the concepts that I was. And when I said the Council of Nicaea, he finished my sentence. Like, yeah, I'm familiar with that, you know? And when I want to talk about Marcus Aquinas, or when I wanted to talk about certain people, he knew it. He knew it away, right away. And all he simply did for me was to talk about willingness. He wasn't there to debate me on my belief or lack of belief. He just asked, was I willing to believe? That's it. And I was, you know, provide me with the right evidence, I'm willing to believe anything. But he was like, just take the steps and look at the evidence of what happens in your life. And man, if he wasn't right, you know, I cannot deny the evidence of something happening in my life, a change. Yeah, I could probably, if I really wanted to, boil it down to the rewiring of neural pathways and the rebuilding of dopamine receptor. Sure. Yeah, I could do that. But like, that's not what's happening to me. It's a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. So choosing my own conception of a higher power, it was simple enough as just being willing to take the rest of the steps and seeing what could happen. I'll say on the other side of this, I had to learn the hard way through sponsorship about that situation, right? Because I did develop a relationship with a higher power that I choose to call God today, but I've sponsored people who are atheists. I've sponsored people who had beliefs that I've never heard of. And early on in my experience of sponsoring others, I had a sponsee who had a belief that I had never heard of. I wasn't even aware it was a thing. And I won't get into specifically what it was, but when he explained to me, we were talking about steps 2 and 3. And when he's explaining his higher power to me, I laughed. I was like, oh, well, really? And he got, I could see it on his face. And he was like, yeah, that's one of my resentments as well. My family thinks my belief is funny. And I felt terrible. I felt absolutely terrible. Because not only had I done exactly what he had the problem with his family, is I belittled his belief. I mean, I had to learn the hard way that I'm not here to talk about anybody's higher belief. There are 41 people in this room. I am agnostic to 40 other people's higher power. It's your own higher power. It's not mine. And that young man that I did that to, you know, I felt terrible. And I make sure today that I'm not here to talk to anybody about what they believe or even don't believe. I can just share the experience of my belief in what my higher power has done for me, and stress the nature of this program, which is a spiritual program. People are going to talk about God. It's just going to happen. And early on, that used to piss me off. And walk into a meeting, like, oh, no, they're not one of these. It's church. I'm out. But then I started to listen, and I started to listen to the underlying theme, which was something different. I was the one judging everybody else. It was me. Nobody cared what I believed or didn't believe in. I cared more about what they believed in, because what I heard was, you need to do this, you need to do that. Nobody was saying that. It's just the way I internalized and rephrased it. But yes, I do have a spiritual program today. This is a spiritual program. This is a, but you know, it your conception can be what you make it. And that didn't, you know, going through this on my own, I'm not sure I could have come to that conclusion on my own. I needed someone to sort of help me navigate through that. I would still be at steps 2 and 3 if I was left to myself. I really would. Cause I was trying to get the God thing and the spiritual awakening first, you know. I was trying to get that first, and then I'll do the rest of your silly steps. Let me get this whole God thing figured out first. My sponsor was like, no, don't worry about that. This is just about willingness. Are you willing to do the rest of this and see what happens? And I did. And my higher power reached out to me, and continues to reach out to me through others. I get closer to God the closer I get to God's children. Anyways, that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Larry. I'm really enjoying listening to you. I was thinking, you know, that I was raised going to church until I was about 12. And it wasn't that I really disliked it. Well, I didn't like all the rules. There were a lot of rules at my house, too. And I wasn't very good at following rules. And And what I learned from those two things was how to not get caught, you know. And even and when I got caught, I would say, well, I didn't get caught the five times before, you know, and I would justify it. But the other thing was I didn't want to give up, you know, half of one of my weekend days to go to church. And because I wanted to be on the playground with my friends and outside. And what I realized in thinking about that just now was that, you know, being outside is a big part of my higher power now. You know, I thank God he lives in my heart and my gut, and he also lives in nature. And I get a big thrill out of being in nature and seeing, you know, what's out there and what God has created. And but I'm so grateful that step two doesn't say, you know, had to believe in God. It says came to believe in a power greater than ourselves, because I wasn't there yet. You know, I was really scared all that. I was that hole in the donut guy. If I give that up, who am I going to be? And how do I do that? And how do I turn my will and my life over? And my sponsor said, you turn your will and your life over by doing these steps. You know, that's how you come to believe, is by doing these steps. And sure enough, that's what happened. Now, I did have a couple of experiences with prayer fairly early, where I was very scared, very fearful of something. And I prayed and I prayed, and a calm came over me. And there's no other way to explain it. You know, I felt it. And so that helped push me along too. But, you know, when I saw and working through the steps and doing my fourth and fifth with my sponsor and having him share some of his stuff, that I was really very fortunate to be where I was, you know, that it could be a whole lot worse, that something had been looking out for me, even in those days when I thought that I was all alone and nobody cared, you know, it could have been so much worse. And he helped me to do that. He had me look at those things and look at the things that had happened to me and the things that hadn't happened to me that could have easily happened to me. And that was the solution. And he helped me come to my own conclusions. He wasn't a guy, like I said earlier, that told me, you know, what to think or moralized or lectured. He would guide me into my own realization that he already had, but, you know, he would help me to find it. And that's what helps me, because then I get used to, yeah, that thinking pattern, that inventory process, that way of looking at what my part was. And I'm glad that, you know, life's not fair, because as it was, I wouldn't be here right now, you know. And it's been very good to me, especially since being sober. I think it was in here, or maybe it was earlier, it talked about using everyday language. Yeah, I'm glad of that, because I don't have any other language, you know. I'm not a theologian, or I'm not even really a religious guy. I'm a spiritual guy, and I believe, there's no doubt about it, I believe. But, you know, it's hard for me to explain at times. I just know that this process has taken me to that, and that I've seen it happen to so many people that went through this process. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. We're going to do one more reading, and then let you guys go back and forth, and we'll wrap up since we're a little tight on time. Page 94, outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions.
Thanks, Graham. That the more hopeless, the better. That was that whole concept, like, it seems so cruel. It really does. It says several times throughout this chapter about, you know, basically the gist of it, I'll paraphrase, is like, maybe he needs a little bit more pain. Maybe, you know, the more hopeless, the better. And that was my experience. I'm not trying to hear anything when life is going great. I don't walk around when life is going grand, you know, saying, you know what? I think I'm going to change the whole philosophy of my life. I think I'm going to go, you know, these silly meetings when things are going well. It's usually my willing to do something different is proportional to my pain. When I'm in a lot of pain, I'm willing to try some other stuff. And that's exactly what happened here. And my sponsor just would always, just like it says, just reiterating the same thing, how he did it, how he got sober. This is the steps that I took. And I love what it says here. Earlier, it talks about no moralization, no lecturing. Here, it's saying, you know, quiet, sane, full of understanding. Maybe you made a friend. That doesn't sound, well, I'm not going to go there. But yes, that sounds like a very mutually beneficial relationship. It doesn't sound like, shut up, don't talk, you don't know anything, you're brand new, you don't know any. It sounds like a different conversation to me. Quiet, sane, understanding. Maybe you even made a new friend. And I'm glad that my sponsor took that way with me, because where I was at the time, I might have ripped somebody's throat out had they done some of those things to me. You know, not to say that's right or wrong, but that's just where I was. I was a pretty angry person. And I know we're out of running out of time, but it's stated so much, and it's somewhat cliche, but it really does, man. We were talking about it earlier in a different meeting about seeing newcomers show up at meetings. Our faces light up. It energizes us. You know, it is something about it when someone raises their hand and they're picking up the chip, or they're in their first 30 days. It just does something to the room, and everybody, it just brings a smile to people's faces. And it's like, you are home. You are where you need to be. And I know it feels bad, and I know it hurts, and I know it's rough, but there's so much love in this room for you. I swear, if you're new, this is the spot to be in. Anyways, that's all I got.
Thanks, Larry. That's great. Yeah, the sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you know, after the laughter and all of that, and what, you know, my perception of that, the next thing was when I would sit with these guys, and they seemed sane, quiet, and full of understanding, you know, and God, I wanted that. I'd lived such a chaotic, up and down roller coaster existence for so long. And these guys, they were serene, you know, and things didn't seem to throw them as much. And I did want that. And I think that's attractive. Back to that, I think that was very attractive to me. And I hope I can be that way. You know, I don't fire anybody. I don't even like the word firing people. I have removed myself before when I didn't think I was helping somebody, but I say, you may want to try somebody else, but I'm more than happy to keep talking to you, call me, whatever. But, you know, I don't know why I'm still here. You know, it's just been a lot of help from a lot of people, and there have been places where, you know, I've had those spots where it was only my relationship with a higher power that got me through. But, you know, that was the result of a sponsor guiding me through the steps and taking the time to listen to me when I was crazy or all stirred up about something that really, you know, how important is it anyway, kind of thing. But he listened, you know, and like Larry was saying, you know, I don't always have an answer or a solution. I can tell you what doesn't work a lot time, more times than I can tell you what does, but that's helpful, you know, and I can guide, you know, people to somebody else who I know has experience in that area, or that may even be a professional, not somebody in AA, you know, let's go to a lawyer or a therapist or whatever, but I'll listen, you know, I'll listen. You know, love and tolerance is our code, and I've been shown so much of that Yeah, I'm not a great judge of who's going to get it and who's not going to get it. And what I, you know, my part is just to be there. And God, I get surprised all the time. You know, I watch people like it in that first reading to watch their eyes open up and they walk straighter and they their eyes are clear and they you can tell they're responding and with honesty and heart. It's a beautiful thing. Thank y'all.
Thank you guys. That was freaking awesome. We'll have a chance to thank you guys all at the end here. I just posted the link for the seventh tradition, which states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? You can either throw a blue hand up, wave it to screen. I'm gonna throw one in here real quick. There's a new meeting starting up in January. The Mid-Atlantic group, the meeting information's in the chat. They started 6:45 on Thursdays. January 7th is their first meeting, and Linda W. from Canada will be speaking. It'll be like a speaker half and participation half format. So come out, join us, see how you like it. Any other announcements? All right. And you can reference the Tidewater Intergroup meeting page for new meetings, closed meetings, meetings that are on Zoom or back in person. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. All home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. In closing, gonna quickly unmute this so everybody can thank our wonderful speakers. Go ahead.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
guys. Great message.
Thank you both so much.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, guys. Very much needed to hear what you had to say, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Grant.
Great night. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Grant.
Thank you.
Good job, Grant.
No, thank you
so much,
Larry. That was fantastic. All right. And I have asked a volunteer, Seth, to read the last three paragraphs on page 164. Let me throw this up for you, Seth.
Hey, bud.
There you go.
All right, guys. Good evening, everybody. A vision for you, Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come. If your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thank you, Seth. And I think we have a nice way of closing with the Lord's Prayer. We'll virtually all circle up and we'll do the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
That was awesome. So good.
Yay.
I love you both so much.
Thanks, Grant.